Class is in session. You're listening to Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horshick.
Let's go!
Now, let's start the show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Thank you so much for checking out today's show. This is episode 82 of the Squat University podcast. The goal with each and every one of these shows is to bring you as much value-packed content to help you move better in the gym and in life, decrease your body's aches and pains, and help you reach your true athletic potential. Now, before we get into today's show, I wanted to let you all know that I will be in Chicago this summer, June 20th and 21st, for a two-day seminar at River North CrossFit. Now, if you have not been to one of my seminars before, here's how they run. Day one is all about the squat. We go over how to break down your lift from start to finish and find out exactly what is limiting you in performing perfect technique, whether that's limited ankle mobility, poor knee stability, and so on. Day two is dedicated to injury management. So going in depth into understanding the different reasons for developing back pain, for example, how to screen your body to understand what's causing your injury. And then we go over how to safely kickstart the return process to lifting without pain. Now, I don't travel that often to do seminars because of my busy schedule as a physical therapist. So this is my only planned seminar at the moment for 2020. If you want to pick up a ticket for my event before it's sold out, head on over to squatuniversity.com and click on the upcoming seminars at the menu tab at the top of the website. I hope to see you guys there. Now, with that being said, let's get to today's show. The topic of the show is literally going to blow some of your minds. The message flies in the face of what many of us have known to be true all of our lives. And that's the idea that icing an injury and icing a sore muscle is a good thing. What I've come to find, and what you will too, is that we have been dead wrong. So without further ado, let's get to today's show. Gary, thank you so much for taking time to come on the Squat University podcast. I want to start off with a simple question. From the time we're young, we're told that if something hurts, you put ice on it. If you fall and bump your knee, ice helps decrease inflammation and swelling is what we're told. It's the first thing you do to help spark recovery. As physical therapists, we're taught to apply ice to injuries. You know, it goes for a recent injury like a sprained ankle. It also, during the recovery process in rehab, if someone comes to me for shoulder pain, I go through their shoulder rehab exercises and then we put ice on afterwards. You know, we finish with a cold ice pack and it feels good for them. What is wrong with ice?
Well, great question. Thanks for having me on your show. I'm happy to be here. What is wrong with ice? Well, let's just start with a simple thing that it delays healing, it increases swelling, it causes an additional damage, and it shuts off the signals that alert you to harmful movement, and you need movement to solve the problem. You need the signal to prevent you from doing harmful movement. So other than that, I don't have much of a problem with it.
So I guess let's start at the very beginning. Whenever we're taught about how to treat injuries, the first thing that people are always told to do is to put ice on a knee or ice on an elbow or ice on an ankle because it comes with the idea that it is going to help fix inflammation and swelling. Now, in your research and all the learning that you have done across the years, I've read in your book that you said the first thing people need to understand is inflammation is different than swelling. Can you explain that?
Well, it's different. It's as different as a hammer and a screwdriver, for heaven's sakes. It has nothing to do with each other. The inflammatory response is phase one of three phases of healing. Inflammation, repair, remodels. In every clinical textbook, anybody can Google it, say, what's the three steps to healing? Inflammation, repair, remodel. So inflammation, that's supposed to happen. That's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's what drives the healing process, following then repair and remodel. Swelling isn't a good or a bad thing. It's merely the accumulation of waste at the end of the inflammatory cycle you have not yet evacuated. That's all it is. So there are two entirely different things. In fact, I think I'm wrong saying a hammer and a screwdriver. It's more like a hammer and an apple. They have nothing to do with each other. It is merely the accumulation of waste at the end of the inflammatory cycle you have not yet evacuated. That's all it is. So once you get it clear in your mind what it actually is, swelling, then you say, well, so don't I want to prevent it? Well, no, actually, you don't want to prevent it. And if you remember from your textbook days, I know it's been a while for you, but if you remember from your textbook days, it says that when a area is damaged, when the damaged vessels will constrict, convert ingredients into blood, grow a clot, basically the clotting factors, grow a clot, repair the vessel, dissolve the clot, normalize blood flow in 3 to 10 days or so, comma, the healthy surrounding vessels dilate and increase perfusion. What that means, the fluid being sent to the area isn't some arbitrary event. It's actually by design. It's mobilized and repair and cleanup crew to the site, helping to package the waste for evacuation via the passive lymphatic system. So you go, now wait a minute, you mean to tell me that the fluid's supposed to come to the damaged site? Of course it's supposed to come there. Why do you think it comes? But let's say that differently. Mm-hmm. Do you honestly believe that your immune system mistakenly sends fluid to a damaged site? Mm. Well, and what's in that fluid? What's going on? Well, that's transporting the repair and cleanup crew for all us regular people. For people in your world, that would be the insulin-like growth factor, the macrophages, the neutrophils. That's what's coming to the site to basically repair and clean up the mess. And you say, well, but don't I want to block that? Well, let's just say you're right and you should block it. Mm-hmm. You're not, but let's just say you were right and you should block it. No, I mean you. I mean whoever is questioning this talk.
Yeah.
Let's say you were right and it shouldn't be there. How much shouldn't be there? All of it? Should none come? 100%? Is it 5% too much? 12% too much? 17% too much? Are you different than me? Your hands different than feet? How are you going to measure? Hey, maybe I don't have enough. So how are you going to establish the parameters? Tell me specifically how you're going to manage and measure how much fluid is going to the damaged site. And how will you know if you've done it? Mm-hmm. By the way, you have no answer to that, neither does anybody else, and nobody ever will, because it's a foolish question. Of course you can't predict in advance how much fluid is supposed to go to the damaged site. You know nothing about the process. Your innate intelligence is controlling that. The same thing that puts eyelashes and fingernails where they belong is regulating the amount of fluid being sent to a damaged site. Right after you think you're smarter than your innate intelligence, give me a call. I want to hear about it.
So you have this injury. Let's say you sprain your ankle. And instantaneously, there's an inflammation process that is sparked, because that's the body's first response to the recovery process, is to have inflammation, which sparks, basically there's a number of different metabolic processes that occur that help repair the damaged sites. You have the cleanup and repair crew that are starting their jobs. And as a side effect of that, as a part of that, there's swelling that enters that area. That's why the ankle swells after a sprained ankle. What does ice do to that? Because I know a lot of times people will say, all right, let's put your foot up, let's rest, ice, and compress. What does the ice application during that initial phase, what does that do to everything that's going on?
It slows down the process. So it's like there's a crash on the highway, mm-hmm. and you don't want to see a traffic jam, so you build a roadblock. Mm. It's like, what? What did you just, why would you block the repair and cleanup crew from getting to the site? In other words, there's a crash on the highway. The police, the ambulance, the firefighters, the EMTs are trying to get to the damaged site, the tow trucks, or trying to get there to clean up the mess and help everybody. And you don't want to see a traffic jam, so you build a roadblock. Now, why in the world would you want to build a roadblock? Because that's what the icing does.
Yeah.
Now, the good news is, ice isn't, in my opinion, the worst member of this RICE protocol.
Okay.
Without a doubt, rest is the biggest enemy.
Okay.
What the rest is going to do is basically slow down the metabolic process. It's going to slow down cardiac output and flow. So that's not a good plan to sit still. The ice just makes it worse. It slows things down even further. And then there's that thing called compression. I don't know who thought of that one, but it doesn't make any sense at all. If you think about it, if you rest, ice, compress, what does that actually mechanically do? And I'm going to help everybody. It traps the waste in and around the damaged site and prevents the natural flow of oxygen and supplies. Now, let's hear those words again, okay? It traps the waste in and around the damaged site and prevents the natural flow of oxygen and supplies. Please tell me, Aaron, somewhere in all of your training, mm-hmm. someone told you that would be a good idea.
Very true.
Anyone ever tell, did you ever see in a textbook that said trapping the waste in and around the damaged site and preventing the natural flow of oxygen and supplies would be a good idea?
Did you ever? I have not.
Ever did anybody ever suggest it to you in all of your training?
I have not. That's interesting, though, because that's the exact opposite of what we think we're doing when we're doing the RICE protocols. We think we're kickstarting the healing process in the correct way.
Oh, you're doing the exact opposite. You couldn't do it more wrong short of beating the area with a ball peen hammer.
Yeah.
Hey, it's so ridiculously wrong. You go, no, you want to do that. Okay, well, here's why I'm doing it. I want to prevent swelling. Okay, if you want to prevent swelling, you're going to have to think it through. How can you prevent swelling without disrupting the natural process of the inflammatory, or the natural cascade following the inflammatory process? How can you get rid of swelling? What can you do? Well, there's only one thing you can do. That fluid has to go back to your passive lymphatic system. There's no other way out. It doesn't evaporate. The abracadabra won't work. It only can return by the passive lymphatic system. So let's just think about that. You have this system called your lymphatics. It's passive. Mm-hmm. You got to activate the muscles in and around the damaged site to, in effect, milk the cow backwards. When the muscle squeezes around the lymphatic vessel, pushes it up a chamber, the empty chamber now has negative pressure, pulls more waste out of the interstitial space, and so on. So visually, it's like milking the cow backwards. Mm-hmm. So let's just think, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to lessen the amount of fluid in the area or reduce the swelling. Not prevent the swelling, you're trying to reduce the swelling. Big difference. You're mm-hmm. not preventing it, you're not building a roadblock on the front side. You're simply saying, well, how do I get it out of here? Well, you get it out of here by activating the muscles in and around the damaged site. There's no other way. That's the way the lymphatic system works. So you go, well, wait a minute. You mean sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around it won't do that? Now, just think about that. Everybody out there listening, if you have no education whatsoever in the entire field, you've never heard anything about it before, do you think that sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around the damaged site would evacuate waste to a passive lymphatic system? I hope everyone has said no, it wouldn't work. Of course it doesn't work. And very here's sure. the biggest problem. Here's what's wrong. Not ice, not rice. They're just things being thrown at you to confuse the topic. Here's the real question. What are you trying to do? As a clinician, what are you actually trying to do? And I'm going to help you because I don't want you to say something that's almost what I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And sorry, but in an hour conversation, I kind of want to leave this spot.
Yeah, but that's fine.
I don't think you'll disagree with me. Mm-hmm. Here's what you're trying to do. Prevent further loss and regenerate that which has been destroyed. That's what you're trying to do. Sure. So you're trying to preserve and regenerate tissue, right? Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Definitely.
Someone gets hurt. You don't want more loss post-trauma. So what causes more loss? Let's look at it real simple. So what causes more loss? Well, more loss could be caused by a significant buildup of congestion in and around the damaged site that ultimately will suffocate and kill otherwise perfectly healthy cells, right? Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Definitely.
So if you didn't want to suffocate and kill otherwise perfectly healthy cells in and around the damaged site, what would be the best way to decongest that area? By the way, the only way to decongest that area, and that's to passively activate or to use the passive lymphatic system to move the waste out. There's no other way. So you've got to activate the muscles in and around the damaged site if you want to avoid suffocating and killing otherwise perfect healthy cells that were not involved in the initial trauma. No choice. That's what you got to do. Well, what else goes wrong? What else causes additional loss? Well, inactivity. So you'll have what's called disuse atrophy. And what causes disuse atrophy? Well, disuse. Let's talk about it. You're going to rest, sit still, don't move. That's going to cause disuse atrophy. So you don't want to do that. You clearly don't want to trap the waste in and around the damaged site and prevent the natural flow of oxygen supplies. That's a bad idea. So how could you avoid disuse atrophy? Well, it just so happens that same muscle activation that milks the cow backwards and gets the waste decongest the area in and around the damaged site, that same muscle activation causes the muscle to produce and release what's called PGC alpha-1 that blocks or retards the disuse atrophy. It's like, this is incredible. The two big things that go wrong, suffocating and killing of otherwise perfectly healthy cells who are not involved in initial trauma, and disuse atrophy, are both settled by the same muscle activation. Wait, there's more. Next thing you got to do is you have to look at the site and say, okay, well, I don't want any more loss, so I'm going to get rid of the swelling, the congestion. I'm going to prevent or retard disuse atrophy, but don't I have to reconstruct the vascular network around the damaged site? In other words, get those vessels back where that have been broken and destroyed? Well, the answer is yes. Well, now how in the world are you going to do that? I mean, what could possibly recapitalize the area around the damaged site? Same stress that decongests the area, the same muscle activation that decongests the area so cells don't suffocate and die, same stress that prevents or retards disuse atrophy, that same stress causes what's called sprouting angiogenesis and recapitalizes the area around the damaged site. So these are three giant problems that you have after an injury, after trauma, after surgery. The three giant problems: you're going to suffocate and kill from the congestion. You're going to disuse, you're going to have disuse atrophy from not using it. And you got to recapitalize the area around the damaged site. You got to rebuild that network, that bruising that you see in your body part. That's the broken blood vessels. You got to rebuild that network. Okay, well, that's three big things you're going to take care of. But what's the next thing that can cause additional loss? Well, something called adhesions. It just so happens, by the way, that when you put ice on, it causes faulty scarring by an increased production of collagen around the fiber. So that will make the tissue not function as well. But then also, if you're still and you have put ice on it and you have compressed it, you in fact won't be activating it. Therefore, you won't be reorganizing repaired tissue. So guess what happens? You get faulty scarring over the cold adhesions. And as a clinician, I know how aware you are of this. And as a patient at one time, I also am very aware of this. Breaking adhesions post-trauma is no fun.
No, it isn't.
Hurts and will draw tears. But why does it matter? Why would you have to fix it anyway? Just leave it alone. Who cares if you have faulty scarring? Well, it affects your function. Mm-hmm. So that's more loss. So it's loss of functional activity or functional movement. So we got four big things we just caught. We're not suffocating and killing otherwise perfect cells anymore because we decongested it. We're preventing or retarding disuse atrophy. We're recapitalizing the area around the damaged site by rebuilding the vascular network. And then on top of that, we've just taken care of realigning remodeling the repaired tissue to avoid foldy scarring. It's like, wow, you just take four of the big things that cause additional loss. Well, there's a really important point there. That's what you have to focus on. Not whether you do ice or rice. You focus on those four things. Now, look at anything you do and say, does it do any of those four things or all of them? Well, it just so happens that muscle activation, loading the tissue, does all four. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, wow, isn't that incredible? Why don't I just do that if it does all four? Do I have to do them differently? No. Same stress does all four things simultaneously. Then on top of that, you want to regenerate the tissue in and around the damaged site. So how does that work? Well, it just so happens, this is incredible, that by stressing the tissue or loading it, that's what regenerates the tissue. That's what causes the production and release of the myokines that drive or mediate the tissue regeneration process. It's like, this is insane. The four things that you got to do to prevent further loss and the thing you got to do to regenerate the tissue around the damaged site are all done by the same thing? Of course, they had to be. Just imagine if those five things that you're going to do, regenerate the tissue, prevent or retard disuse atrophy, reorganize, repair tissue, rebuild the vascular network around the damaged site, that last thing would be to decongest the area in around the damaged site.
So here's my question that I have for you. I know a lot of physical therapists, athletic trainers, chiropractors are listening to this who classically have been those that, you know, put bags of ice or an ice pack or a game ready system on their patients after their therapy session. You know, they get in and their ankle hurts, their knee hurts, their back hurts. They do their physical therapy and then they throw a cold pack on them afterwards. And obviously what they've learned right now is that that is not an efficient way to continue the healing process. And in fact, you are retarding or, you know, almost stalling the healing process by doing so. And in going off of that, obviously we've talked about how muscle contraction, actually activating the muscles that surround the injured area, is what's actually going to promote the healing process, promote swelling decrease, promote the improvement of muscle hypertrophy, so decrease the risk of atrophy to the muscles, restore the healing of all the damaged tissues. But the big thing a lot of people have questions on is they'll say, look, I'm in so much pain, I can't do a lot of movement. What do you say to those people?
Well, okay. So when I look at the question you're saying about pain, I understand, and it makes sense, but I liken that idea to the sympathetic bartender that gives the alcoholic a drink so it can temporarily feel better. Will it work? Yeah. Did you solve the problem? No. Did you make it worse? Yeah. And you go, no, wait a minute. That's not a very good plan then. So you mean it's going to work while I'm making it cold, but when I take the cold away and the normalized temperature returns, do I still have the problem I had before I made it cold? No, actually you don't. Now it's worse. And so why would anyone do that? Why would you want to do something that gives you relief but doesn't solve the problem? Why don't you solve the problem? Why don't you address why you have pain? The reason you have pain mostly is because you have congestion building in and around the damaged site. That's putting pressure on the nerves, that's suffocating and killing otherwise perfectly healthy cells that were not involved in the initial trauma, and it becomes very painful. And you haven't found your neutral position yet. And you say, well, what's a neutral position? Well, whenever you got hurt in your whole life, you quickly figured out that position makes it hurt more, and that position makes it hurt less.
True.
Rolled your ankle, you have a sprained ankle. You quickly found out that doing box jumps with a sprained ankle made it hurt more. And sitting still with a cock a little to the right, a little to the inside, made it hurt less. So find a neutral position and begin to decongest the area in and around the damaged site instead of making it not hurt right now. Because making it hurt right now isn't going to fix it. Just like giving that the sympathetic bartender giving the alcohol a drink doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't solve it. It makes it worse. Putting ice on it and saying, well, I'm going to make it not hurt. Okay, but are you going to fix the problem? Well, no. Are you going to make it worse? Yeah, but it makes it feel good for right now. Okay, let's find a neutral position and decongest the area in and around the damaged site. You're going to feel a lot better and have a lot less pain. Now, one of the things about that is this. If you, when you first get injured, you know, that it's going to get worse in the next 45 minutes.
Yeah.
If you had a significant injury, it doesn't get better in the next 45 minutes. It gets worse regarding the congestion. So I have an analogy for that I think works very well, and I hope it does here. If you knew it was going to snow 24 inches in the next 24 hours, if you knew that, 1 inch per hour, if every hour on the hour you would open your front door, with a good stiff broom, you could effortlessly keep that 1 inch of snow up your sidewalk. It'd be simple. If, however, you wait till morning and open your door to 24 inches of angry snow, I assure you will not be effortless and you will not clear it with a good stiff broom. So the moral of that story is procrastination is a fundamental flaw in injury management. Don't make it not hurt right now and make it worse for tomorrow. Right now, look at it and say, well, I'm pretty sure what's going to happen. So we need to start decongesting that area. In other words, we need to start clearing that snow off the sidewalk because it's going to get a lot worse if we don't. And what does nearly everyone do? Nearly everyone procrastinates. They say, well, let's see how it is tomorrow. No, let's not see how it is tomorrow. I know how it's going to be. I can tell you right now what it's going to look like. The ball comes off the plate, hits the guy in the shin. I hear it all the way in the dugout. Everybody stands up and looks at the player who drops to the ground and screams. Do you really need to run out to see if there's a bump on his shin? I mean, do you really need to go look, or do you already know there is? Well, of course you know there is. So if you know you're going to have congestion, the buildup of swelling in the area, which is merely the accumulation of waste at the end of the inflammatory cycle, you have not yet evacuated it. Why don't most people evacuate it? Because they procrastinate. Or worse, they do the Rice protocol, where they literally trap in and around the damaged site and prevent the natural flow of oxygen supplies. It's so obviously wrong to let it accumulate, but they do. And they'll say, well, I don't know how. No, you do know how. Because all through time, we always knew how. When I grew up in the late 50s, early 60s, to all your millennial listeners, that's last century, and yes, I'm not old, but here's the point of it. No coach ever told us to sit still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around it while we held it in the air. No one ever said to do that. Every coach told us, every time anybody has ever hurt my entire childhood athletic career, every coach said, walk it off. Don't sit still, it'll tighten up. Everyone knows that. Now, I'm assuming at Squat University, you've had a day or two where you did squats so hard that your legs were trashed the next day, maybe even the following day. Ever happened to you?
Many times.
Okay, and what was the solution? To sit still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around it or go do light squats the next day?
Man, you get up and you go do a light warm-up, you ride the bike, you walk around, you do some mobility work, you feel 100% better.
Correct. You walked it off, in effect.
Yep.
What we've done since the beginning of the time was walked it off. Mm-hmm. We've always known to do that. Just back in 1978 when the Rice Protocol was invented, guess what? We changed. Mm-hmm. What we had done for all time was suddenly not right. We always walked it off. Everyone knows if you sit still, it tightens up. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that if you don't start moving it. Remember first day of football? I remember ninth grade football like it was a minute ago.
Yeah.
And they gave us cleats for the first time because in eighth grade weighted football, you didn't wear cleats. Mm. They gave us cleats the first day. And nobody had the right size, by the way, because it was the shoe somebody from 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So nobody fit right. The next day, our feet and our lower legs were so sore that you're like, how can I possibly play football? I can't do anything. I can't even walk. And the coach came out and started screaming, blew that whistle and said, all right, everybody take a lap. And you saw guys just moaning and whining, running around the track. And yet, by the end of that quarter mile, nearly half the guys were fine. And by the end of calisthenics, we were all okay. In fact, none of us even remembered our feet hurt by the end of calisthenics. That's how efficient your lymphatic system is at moving waste. Now, want to prove that? Ask anybody who it ever happened to, and they'll tell you it worked. Prove it by asking yourself, did it work when you trashed your legs following doing squats? And how about the 1,000 people that you've met in your life who did the same thing? Did it work for them? It always works. Walking it off always works. Sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around it with that limb hanging in the air is a foolish idea. It doesn't make any sense. It was wrong from the day it was invented. It remains wrong now. And by the way, for anybody who's questioning me saying, who's he to say that? Well, it just so happens that I wrote the book, Ice, the Illusionary Treatment Option. And following the release of the book, the man who invented the Rice Protocol, Dr. Gabe Merkin, Harvard grad, board certified in 4 medical professions, which is odd and rare, by the way. Dr. Merkin made up the Rice Protocol in his 1978 sports medicine book. Following reading my book, Dr. Merkin publicly recanted, said, I made this up, the Rice Protocol, in my 1978 book. Research has clearly shown I was wrong. Don't do it. It delays healing and gives a specific reference to the fact that it causes additional damage.
Wow.
In that case, he's referring to ice. Now, Dr. Merkin not only recanted, he wrote the foreword to the second edition of my book. Now, you tell me who called you or talked to you recently that said something that profound. I took down the most recognized protocol in Western medicine.
Yeah.
Got the doctor who made it up to publicly recant, write the foreword to the book that took down his protocol. By the way, I have two forewords to my book. One is by Dr. Kelly Starrett, the CrossFit supple leopard physical therapist, mm-hmm. and the other is Dr. Merkin. So basically, the current reigning king of movement and the godfather of the ice age are the two people that wrote the forewords to the book that took down the most recognized protocol in Western medicine. And something interesting about Dr. Starrett, here's what he says. In the foreword, he says, there are a few seminal moments in my career. Meeting Gary Reinel, that's me, the anti-ice man, is one of them. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know about all your listeners, but I didn't know what seminal meant. So yep. I'm looking it up, trying to make sure it's a good word. As it turns out, it's a very good word. And what I said to Dr. Starr after I saw that unbelievable document that he sent to me as his foreword, mm-hmm. I said, let me ask you a question. Did I tell you anything you don't already know? He said, no. I said, right. You see the point? Have I said anything to you so far? And be honest, be serious.
Yeah.
Have I said one thing to you since we've been talking that you didn't already know?
No.
Okay, there goes the point. You don't have to go check with your professor.
Yeah.
You don't have to go look it up. Everything I just said, all I did was reorganize the facts they presented to you in school in a dysfunctional way. Because, see, they were building the facts around a faulty protocol.
Yeah.
Once you remove the protocol and say instead, hey, based on everything I've learned in school about the lymphatic system, angiogenesis, tissue preservation and regeneration, all the stuff I know, what am I actually trying to do as a therapist? Am I trying to make an area cold and prevent movement? Is that what I'm trying to do? Or am I trying to preserve and regenerate tissue, prevent further loss, and regenerate that which has been destroyed? And I'll ask you that question. Now I really would like you to answer me.
Yep.
Do you disagree or do you agree that your job as a therapist is to prevent further loss and regenerate that which has been destroyed?
I would 100% agree.
Okay, then anything you ever do for the rest of your career, if it doesn't do that, don't do it.
And just like you said, I have to second what Kelly wrote in the foreword of your book, or of your book, and talking about how it is one of the things that completely changed the way he treats. I mean, coming up as a physical therapist, and it's been close to a decade now that I've been treating as a doctor of physical therapy. And for the longest time, it's, you know, at the end of a treatment session, all right, let's get some ice on your knee. Let's get some ice on your shoulder. Following an ACL tear, you know, when I was in Kansas City at Boost Physical Therapy, I was seeing, you know, 3 or 4, 5 ACL, you know, post-op patients a day. It was one of the things that we commonly saw. And one of the questions early on is always, you know, I'm in a lot of pain. What's the thing that I do at home? I'm like, well, you got your home exercise program. Make sure you got some ice on it to help deal with the pain. And then I'm continuing to look in almost, I like to say, go down the rabbit holes into my own ways of learning. You know, I obviously early on, I dug into a lot of Kelly's stuff, which is why the way in which I treat today is very similar to the way in which Kelly has always taught. And a few years ago, I'm starting to catch on to the idea that, you know, I'm seeing more and more that is ice really as important as I was taught it was to the healing process? And then I remember watching your video that you did with Kelly in 2012, I believe, at the CrossFit Games. And I caught that on YouTube a couple years later. And it just blew my mind. I was like, I've never heard of this before. I've never, in all my physical therapy school classes or in talking to any of my mentors above me, ever heard the idea that what I was doing to patients, telling them to put ice on their injury, or just not even a patient, but talking to a healthy athlete, they get done with their practice, say they're a baseball player and their elbow or their shoulder sore. For sure, you know, as a physical therapist and being movement minded, I would always tell them, you know, let's work on why it's painful. Let's get to the underlying why. You know, it's probably a mechanic thing, mobility, stability. Let's fix the way you're moving. But it was always followed with, well, if it hurts, you know, we can still put some ice on. It's going to help with the pain. And slowly I'm seeing these things. And I've always been one to say, if I can't, you know, clearly articulate the why behind every single thing that I do with a person, I don't own that modality or that way, that method of treatment. So when it came to icing, if someone were to ask me, like you always say, why are you icing? Tell me the exact reason behind the premise that you're trying to apply this modality. And then you clearly articulated in your book ways in which I was completely questioning everything I'd done up to that point. And now me sitting here, I haven't put an ice pack on someone in I don't know how many months. I haven't used a game ready system, which is the ice and compression, in I don't know how many months. And I had an athlete walk in the other day with his trainer to where I'm at in St. Louis. And they're like, hey, you know, he's so-and-so is dealing with some knee pain after we got done. Can they ice? And I'm like, that's not what I do. Like, that's the wrong way to go about it nowadays. We need to understand why the pain is there and fix it. But ice is going to slow down that healing process. So I have to definitely, you know, second what Kelly is saying is the ideas that you're sharing. It is not that it's new science, but you're reiterating it in a way that is making us question the protocols that people have put in place for us that were not based in correct methodologies. And basically ice, putting it on someone that is in pain, is clearly slowing the inflammation process down, which is a helpful process, and we're going about it the wrong way, we have to ask ourselves, instead of trying to block the things that are there to help us improve and spark the recovery, we need to think, how am I helping the passive lymphatic system? Which then brings it to my next question, which is, let's talk about the cases for like post-op. Let's say you had a surgery, meniscectomy, an ACL. Every single surgeon is going to tell someone right now, put some ice on it. What ways do you tell people they're out of surgery, they're hurting, they don't like to move a lot, but their surgeon's telling them to put ice on their knee? What do you tell them in that time to help them spark that healing process and help with the passive lymphatic system? Because clearly they can't move their body as much. They can't load their body as much because of maybe their post-op restrictions. What do they do to help improve that passive lymphatic system so they can sort of help take the swelling out of the joint so it doesn't accumulate? We don't have that accumulation of congestion.
Well, the first thing that I would do is try to get the doctor before the surgery to understand and retract the recommendation to ice.
Yeah.
And why I say that is, if I went to a doctor and before surgery, and that's what they told me they were going to do, I'd find a different doctor. Mm-hmm. Because if you have that fundamental flaw in your process, I have an article on my website, GaryReynolds.com. It's free, by the way, on my website. So anybody can go there, you can take my stuff, print it, use it any way you want. But I have a paper called Procrastination, a Fundamental Flaw in Injury Management. And in that paper, I explain everything. And my co-author, by the way, is the editor-in-chief of the Physician Sports Medicine Journal. So for those who like to have their credentials after a name as opposed to a reporter teacher like me, I've got both. So I did all the work, spent 7 years researching, organizing, interviewing top trainers at basically every major NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, soccer, MMA, Olympics. I went all over the country to hundreds and hundreds of the most elite trainers, doctors, and therapists and interviewed. So I spent my time, but I also have a co-author who is a accomplished orthopedic surgeon. And the paper is wonderful. Read it. Look at the references. And I'm telling you flat out right now, if I were going to have a surgery and my doctor told me that, I would give maybe a minute after I question, why are you telling me to do that? And if they give me the wrong answer and won't listen, I'd get a different doctor. And some people say, Gary, that's extreme. I'll say, no, it's not extreme, actually. When someone's that misinformed, find someone who isn't. By the way, there are plenty that aren't misinformed. And you say, I actually had one of my elite level, they're really a mentor to the athletes now because they're above the competing day.
Okay.
And they came to me at a meeting that they had set up for me at their facility. And he had ripped his pec off of his humerus. Mm. And they had tacked it back on and anchored it down. And that was on a Friday. They did surgery on Monday. I was there on a Wednesday. I'm in there with his group, with his staff. And they're telling me, you know, what happened, that he said he'd be there. You know, he's looking forward to seeing me. And I said, great. You know, I would expect that he wouldn't come today. It'd be perfectly reasonable to not come. I'll just work with you guys. And he walked in. And when he walked in, I said, apologize for being late. I said, stop it. I said, I appreciate you being here. He goes, oh, I wouldn't miss you being here. I know you came a long way. I said, well, I appreciate that, but okay, so now what? He looked at me, his arms in a sling, and he said, now what? I said, yeah, what are you doing now? What's next? He said, well, they told me to take it easy and, you know, give it a chance to recover and, you know, heal. I said, wait, stop. That is inconsistent with what you just told me you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And everyone looked at me like, what? Now, this guy is a big deal in this group. And the staff was looking at me like, I can't believe you just talked to him like that, because nobody ever aggressively talks at him. I had to get his attention. I said, that is inconsistent with what you just told me you're trying to accomplish. In other words, heal. And he went, well, what do you mean? I said, I'll tell you what, you got the doc's phone number? And he go, yeah. I said, well, yeah, of course, you're in charge. Of course you got the doc's phone number. Give him a call. Mm-hmm. Here's what I want you to ask him. I want you to say, doc, do you think it's a good idea for me to allow the waste to accumulate in and around the damaged site and suffocate and kill otherwise perfectly healthy cells that were not involved in initial trauma? Do you think that would be a good idea? Now they're looking at me like, well, what? I said, no, I want you to do that. And listen, while I got him on the phone, I want you to say, you think it'd be a good idea if I deliberately dampened the process of angiogenesis, in other words, building that network back around the damaged site, the vascular network. Ask him if he thinks that'd be a good idea. And then I want you to also ask him, Doc, you think it'd be a good idea if I basically cause systemic disuse atrophy? And then I want you to ask him, you think it'd be a good idea if I allowed my myostatin level to elevate as a result of my inactivity, which of course the myostatin blocks the muscle regeneration. Mm-hmm. I want you to call your doc and ask him that. And they're looking at me like, hey, I think he's serious. I said, I'm totally serious. In fact, I don't want to do anything with your whole group until you make that call. And he looked at me like, and one of the trainers yelled out, well, Gary, you got to understand, you got to be careful you don't dislodge those anchors. I went, oh, the anchors. Oh, good heavens. I said, look, while he's on the phone, I want you to ask the doc this. I want you to say, Doc, hey, by the way, if I sneeze, will I dislodge those anchors? And one of the other therapists actually yelled out at that point, No. I said, okay, you tell your doc we won't do any, not even approaching stress, not even approaching that created by sneezing. Mm-hmm. We're going to activate the muscles in and around the damaged site. We're going to decongest the area so that no further cells suffocate and die that were not involved in initial trauma and surgery. We're going to begin the reconstruction of the vascular network around the damaged site. We're going to prevent a retarded disuse atrophy. We're going to begin the process of remodeling that repaired tissue around the damaged site. And we're going to continue doing that until everything's healed, which may take a couple months, by the way. And then we're also going to lower your myostatin levels so the muscles can begin to regenerate. I said, now you ask your doc if he disagrees with that. And everyone looked at me like, and I went, guys, did you hear me say anything you don't agree with? You understand, this is a very highly competent professional in your field was doing the exact wrong thing, but believed he was doing the right thing. Mm. Now, do you disagree with what I just said?
Not at all.
Okay, there's a problem then, isn't there? Because even definitely. Elite leaders are being misled and they're not questioning what they're being told to do.
Yep.
So you find a doc who won't agree with what I've just said, find a different doc. Here's what will happen. The good ones will immediately agree. You know why? Because this is throwaway change for them. Mm-hmm. The real stuff's the surgery.
Yep.
They want an optimal result, right? They want the best result possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around it with that body part in the air is not going to produce the best result. It's like, wow, this is unbelievable. Everyone should know this. Okay, here's the facts. Everyone who went to school like you knows what I just said was true.
Yep.
Every single person. You couldn't have graduated your school. It's way too hard if you didn't know what I just said was true. Yet, the protocol that's attached to post-trauma or surgery is wrong.
Yeah.
Now, there's a paper written by the American, published in the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons called Loading by Buckwater. It's referenced in all of my papers. It's heavily referenced in my book. Okay. What that document says in 1999, Buckwater wrote, one of the most important discoveries of the century was the understanding that loading, repairing tissue, facilitates the healing in muscles, tendons, ligaments. We know it, and bones, by the way, and we know it. That's 1999. That's over 20 years ago the paper was published. Everyone knows it's true. See, all we did was went back to what we knew for all time before 78, that walking it off was how you solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't walk it off, you're in trouble. And they say, well, what about his shoulder? How's he going to walk that off? Because he can't even do an upper body ergometer.
Yeah.
Well, you can use a muscle stimulator to activate the muscles in and around the damaged site, never even remotely approaching the tension created by sneezing. Remember, we've already got the clearance. Sneezing wouldn't dislodge it. So we can have significant muscle activation in the palm of your hand, a mid forearm, up under your armpit, up on your trap, nowhere near the shoulder separation or the muscle tear. Nowhere near that, but all around. So those areas don't swell. Because if they swell, It isn't because too much fluid was sent to the damaged site. It was because too little fluid was evacuated from the damaged site. Swelling's not a good or a bad thing. It's merely the accumulation of waste at the end of the inflammatory cycle you have not yet evacuated. That's all it is. You can't find a textbook or an article anywhere that says anything different than I just said. Mm-hmm. They say it in odd ways, but no one ever says, well, swelling's bad. No, swelling isn't bad. It's not bad, or it's not good either. It's merely the accumulation of waste at the end of the inflammatory cycle you have not yet evacuated. The only reasonable question from my point of view, and I believe anybody who's listening to me and agreeing, only reasonable question is, well, how does it evacuate? Mm-hmm. It can only evacuate by the passive lymphatic system. There's no other path out. Doesn't evaporate, no abracadabras, doesn't work. You've got to take it back out to the passive lymphatic system. The only way to move it through that passive system is to activate the muscles in and around the damaged site. There is no other way.
I just want to clarify for all the listeners out there, when he means passive lymphatic system, in your body, we have different vessels. You have your arteries that are going to pump blood to the extremities. You have vessels like your veins that pump blood back towards your heart. And then you have a lymphatic system, which is basically a highway network of connected vessels that run all the way up and down into your body. And the only way in which swelling is able to decrease in an area is through that lymphatic system. It takes the swelling and pumps it out of the area. But it does not work if you are passive, meaning if you just rest and just sit on the couch, the lymphatic system isn't doing anything. Now, the second you start flexing your quad, that muscle contraction is acting like a pumping system, just like you said, sort of pumping reverse milking of the cow. You're pumping the fluid out of that area. So it requires muscle contraction to make the lymphatic system work. Now, you talked about muscle stimulating units. I know recently I have been able to trial the Mark Pro and then also the Power Dot. Have you been able to work with either of those?
I know both products very well. I actually work with pro professional athletic teams and elite athletes all over the country. Mm-hmm. And I personally recommend and am involved with Mark Pro. I believe that the Mark Pro is the best way to do it. And if I thought of a better way, I would use it a better way. Compliance becomes the whole question.
Yeah.
If I can't get you to do what I need you to do with the muscle activation device, then it doesn't matter what it might be able to do. I've got to get you to do it.
And have you tried the Power Dot or seen it?
Oh yeah. I've had it. I've used, if the product has a brand name and it's on the market, yeah, I have tried and used it.
What was the big difference that you saw between the Mark Pro and the Power Dot?
Ease of use and comfort.
Okay.
Is usually the two things that most people will comment on. Mark Pro, because of the way it sends the signal, is a very non-electrical feeling signal. And you're able to get a significant contraction without the muscle fatiguing. You can run it for long periods of time very comfortably. Now, that doesn't mean the Power Dot is bad or the other brands are bad. It's just one of those things where when you find something that I've taken it into, for example, professional Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. And I have right now for sure confirmed, end of spring training I'll know more, but I have confirmed from the trainers that there are well over 200 major league pitchers using Mark Pro. Mm. Now, with that said, there's only 390.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty significant piece of it. I personally believe, based on my placement of units recently, mm-hmm, my sale of units recently, by the way, we don't give anything away. Mm-hmm. So nobody gets them for free. So a lot of people say, oh, well, I've got everybody. Did you give them away? I mean, of course, everybody has one if you gave them away. No, my guys are actually using them because they buy them and they understand how they work. Mm-hmm. So I've got at this point approaching 250 of the 390 major league pitchers, but I have confirmed over 200.
Yeah.
I believe I'm closer to 250. So does that mean that Mark Pro is best? These are people that can afford to buy anything they want. Mm-hmm. And they have Mark Pro. Now, when I get into major colleges, they can buy basically anything they want. Some of the schools have more money than the pros do. It's incredible in some of the schools. Mm-hmm. A donor gives them 50 grand, says, here, go get whatever you want. So in the schools, I dominate with Mark Pro. Mm-hmm. So does it mean nothing else works? Of course it doesn't mean that. You could, if you flexed your foot and did ankle pumps or squeezed a soft ball, that will work. Another tool that works very well is the power plate. If you stand on the power plate, it activates your muscles. That'll work. But then it comes down to ease of use and how does it feel? Mm-hmm. Obviously, a power plate is not very easy to use because you can't carry it around with you. You can't go on the plane, back to the hotel, back to your dorm. You can't do any of that. So it's not very practical. Does it work? Yeah, you give me one, am I taking it? You bet I want one. Absolutely, I want it. But they're like $5,000. And they're hundreds of pounds they weigh. And they're big. People can stand on them. It doesn't break them. So I can't really recommend that that's how you solve a problem with a pitcher's shoulder. So you say, well, why would you pick a brand over another brand? Because mm-hmm. when people use things, mm-hmm. that's how you get results. Mark Pro is easy to use. And I am told by the users that it's more comfortable.
Yeah.
Now, is it? You got to test it yourself. I mean, that's why there's McDonald's and Burger King. It's why there's Coke and Pepsi. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to pick the same thing. But I can tell you, if you go in professional athletics, you're going to see a dominance of Mark Pro. Mm.
So these baseball, Major League Baseball pitchers, instead of the classic get done with their pitch, pitching for the day, instead of icing the shoulder and elbow, they're slapping on the Mark Pro in getting lymphatic drainage and basically passively recovering in a different way. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, but see, that goes back to that original question we had in the beginning of this.
Yeah.
And the question is, what are you trying to do? Because that's how I started off with my first major league pitcher.
Yeah.
I asked the trainer, what are you trying to do? And what was going on was the player was falling out of rotation because he wasn't recovering in the 5 days because they were 5 day rotation. And I said, so what are you currently doing? I said, we're sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around it for about 45 minutes. He had 3 throws. And again, tomorrow morning, if he still doesn't feel good, I said, well, stop doing that. You see how simple my answer was?
Yeah.
If that's not working, stop doing that. But now ask the real question, mm-hmm. not whether you should ice and sit still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around. Let's not ask. Let's say instead, what are you trying to do? We're trying to prevent further loss and regenerate that which has been destroyed. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how would that work? Would sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around it accomplish that task? And the answer is, of course not.
No.
Of course it doesn't. So what does? We got to activate the muscles in and around the damaged site. That's what you have to do. Okay, well, how are you going to do that? Well, you could, you know, I've been told by some of the old-time trainers that guys used to run the lights in the mm-hmm. in the park. And I think, well, that's a pretty inefficient way to activate the muscles in and around your arm and shoulder. But you know what? That would work. This is really inefficient. And it's putting a lot of stress on the whole body. And no offense to pitchers, but they're not really known for running around the ballpark. So I'm just not sure that's a good plan. But mm-hmm. would it work? It would work. I had an old trainer by the name of Dick Mills who has died a few years ago. But Dick Mills told me that, hey, you get in the pool and you use those gloves. And you just mm-hmm. move your arms in circles and back and forth. And that works great. I said, great, Dick, you got a pool? I mean, I get it. That will work. But what about if you only have a small area? Say it's just your trap. Mm-hmm. Just so an easy muscle that everybody can remember, know where it is. It's just your left trap. Well, how about if I can do just your left trap? And I don't have to engage the rest of your body. No legs, no feet, nothing running. And you can sit in a chair and you can, you know, watch the news or read a book. Mm-hmm. Wow, that'd be really convenient. Okay, that's what I said, convenient. Now, if I'm doing it and it has an electrical feel and you don't like how it feels, well, you're not going to do it very good. Mm. But if it feels good and it's easy to do, which the Mark Pro feels good and is easy to do by most mm-hmm. people's opinion, mm-hmm. well, it's always easy to do and most people say it feels good. So it's like, okay, well, why don't I just do that then? So you electronically walk it off in effect. Now, when someone has a bigger injury, mm-hmm. In other words, that micro trauma from throwing a baseball isn't very serious. So that would be called basically an over-the-counter treatment with a Mark mm-hmm. Pro. So mm-hmm. it's If it's tired and sore, you can use Mark Pro. But if you're injured, well, then you have to go to a prescription version of that same technology. Mm-hmm. And that becomes the question of, well, how do you know which? Well, it's pretty simple. If it's tired and sore, it's an over-the-counter product. Mm-hmm. If you're actually injured, well, then you need a prescription, because no offense to all the regular people who think they should treat themselves, but go to a licensed professional like you mm-hmm. and have guidance. Don't be using over-the-counter products to treat an actual injury. Go to a therapist, go to a doctor, get good advice, get the doctor to write a prescription for the medical product, and then work with the problem. Mm-hmm. But I don't recommend that anybody self-treat. One of your listeners may be a marathon runner, mm-hmm. and they severely sprain their ankle, and they think, oh, I'll just get an over-the-counter product and I'll treat it. No, because mm-hmm. you don't even know what's wrong.
Yeah.
You don't know. Did you tear it? Is there a blood clot? You don't have any idea. You've done no tests whatsoever to figure out what's going on. You just know you think you sprained your ankle. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? That's why you go to school for what? Would you take 5 years in school, 6 years?
7 years.
7 years in school. Okay. For everybody out there who thinks they should self-treat when they get hurt, he went to school for 7 years. Aaron went to school for 7 years to help you make right decisions. So I don't ever recommend that anyone self-treat when you're actually injured. You need to go to a professional and get advice. It isn't the advice of what to do that I care about. Mm-hmm. It's the advice of what not to do. Because mm. doing the sense. Wrong thing could ruin your athletic career.
True. That
and how many sense. People? How many people have shown up in your office and says, yeah, I hurt this 15 years ago. So you heard it 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But how many times have you heard that? I mean,
I saw a guy who was,
I'm going to guess, 45 years old. Mm-hmm. And he was limping. He was one of the coaches for one of the teams. And I think he was a coach. He might have been a scout. I'm not sure mm-hmm. what he was. He was wearing a uniform like he was a coach. I'm not quite sure what people are called in the teams.
Yeah.
But he had a baseball uniform on, so he's a coach or a scout, or it wasn't a trainer, so I'm not quite sure what he was. But he was limping. I said, what's going on? He goes, oh, I hurt this back in high school. I'm like, high school? When were you in high school, man? But you see, they don't fix it because they don't think they need to go to a professional.
True.
When in fact, you do need to go to a professional. That's how you actually solve the problem.
Very true. I want to also ask you before our time is up. So many people, and especially in the weightlifting and powerlifting community, especially on people that are on very high volume, I mean like 10 sets of 10, really high level training programs, it is very common for people to use things like ice baths. And now while that's a little bit different as far as like just putting a bag of ice on, you're just immersing your entire body or lower body into an ice bath for so long. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence you hear from people, different lifters, and they're like, oh, I've done ice baths for years. They help me really recover between heavy squat sessions. What do you think is the reason why they feel like they're recovered, and whether or not is that a good idea for people that are in those type of situations?
Well, here's the world according to me, okay? Mm-hmm. If you tell me you feel better and it helps you, I am not going to debate you mm-hmm. because the placebo effect is real.
Yeah.
And if you tell me, oh, before I go out, you know, I got to bang my head against the wall three times, and then I'm the best I am. Okay, you know what? You shouldn't do that. But you know what? If that's what you do to get ready, I don't recommend you bang your head on a hard wall. At least find something soft to bang your head on. and I'm being ridiculous there, but I'm making my point.
Yeah.
So I've met people who say, yeah, it's the discipline, man. It's the discipline. Okay, you know what? If you're going to go in an ice bath, don't do it after you train. And here's the reason why. The literature is very clear on this. And if you want, I'll send you an infogram or whatever you call it.
That'd be great to see.
About an article, great article. And basically what it says is this. It's not, by the way, you can post it up with your stuff.
Yeah, I'll put it in.
It's not mine. I mean, I got it out of a journal, but they let you post it.
Yeah.
So what it does is it dampens both vascular and muscular adaptation. So it's like, wait a minute, I just trained really hard and I'm going to do something that's going to dampen vascular and muscular adaptation. By the way, not only there, but in the journal Hemophilia, If you remember in my book on the, in the last chapter, I talk about where they figured out that putting ice on a hemophiliac, someone who has a hard time preventing, stopping clotting, basically is what their problem is. They can't clot a break. So they found that it makes leaky clots. It blocks both platelet aggregation and adhesion. So basically that's the clot trying to form. Well, it causes leaky clots. So not, it isn't just in sports. We know it's not a good idea, that it disrupts the process, but in sports, following training, it dampens both vascular and muscular adaptation. So if you're going to do it, and you're, don't tell me you're doing it for recovery because it doesn't do that. And if you'd send me it does, I'm going to say, show me physiologically how doing that would facilitate recovery. When remembering what you're trying to do, you're trying to prevent further loss and regenerate which has been destroyed. You know the rules to do that. They're basically called loading the tissue, and you're not loading the tissue so in the ice bath, so it's not facilitating recovery. But if you tell me you do it because you believe it is very good as a discipline, as I got to get myself psyched, I got to do it, I got to prove I can handle what I got. Okay, I get it. There's a lot of advantage to self-control. I completely agree. I understand it. In fact, even talking to Kelly Starrett just a few days ago, Kelly says that, you know what, just do it in the morning before you train. Don't do it after you train because you don't want to dampen both vascular and muscular adaptation. Okay, I get it. There's stuff I do for discipline. I mean, I have one thing where I will stand in place and not move. Just stand in place and not move on one leg. And I'll do it as long as I can. And when I can't do it anymore, I'll do it again. And when I'll do it again. And I'll do it three or four times, maybe five times. Now people say, does that do anything for you? Oh yeah, it makes me focus and think. It's good for my discipline. Now, do I think I would advise others to do that? No, but it's what I like to do. It's how I feel I'm getting control and I'm forcing my discipline to pay attention. Okay, if going in an ice bath is something that you think helps you, I agree, go and do it. Just realize it's gonna dampen both muscular and vascular adaptation.
There you go. Well, Gary, I just want to thank you so much for your time. I know our hour is up and you've got a busy schedule. So I just want to thank you for taking time out of your day to spread the word of how ice is not what we thought it was. And really, I think this is going to be a mind-blowing episode for so many people. For those out there that want to learn more about your message and the things that you share, where can they find you?
GaryReinel.com. So you can, if you put in my name, Gary Reinel, R-E-I-N-L.com. That's all you have to do. And you go right to my website and all my stuff's there. Anything in my resources, you can print and use as you choose. So you find an article that I've written, like Procrastination, A Fundamental Flaw in Injury Management. You're looking for a protocol, like Aaron, you may be interested in a protocol.
Yeah.
I have a protocol in there. It's generic, but it makes the point. It has all the references to prove it's true. But you can. It's called Wasting Away in Margaritaville. And
I like it.
I'm competing with 10,000 articles out there, so I have to sometimes be a little colorful.
For sure.
But that's a great paper. And the second page is the actual protocol that I recommend to all the pro teams that I work with. And then the paper on my website also called Secondary Cellular Death is Actually Negligent Homicide, where I explain that the idea of secondary cellular death is a complete myth. It's a total, complete, and absolute misunderstanding. A guy by the name of Knight named it back in the 70s, and he missed it so far that I can't even justify how much he missed it by. It is not secondary cellular death. It's not what it is. I know they told you in school it's called that, but it's not. It's primary to the congestion and the disuse. If you remove the congestion and you don't have disuse, you will not have the subsequent loss, correct? Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah.
So if it's secondary cellular death, it's the result of the first. So you roll your ankle and then this happens. No. You roll your ankle and the suffocating and killing of otherwise perfect healthy cells were not involved in the initial trauma. That happens as a result of the congestion. If you never allow that 24 inches of angry snow to accumulate, in other words, you keep it clear, you never let it accumulate, keep it out, keep it out, keep it out, keep it out. You do that, you will not have the suffocating and killing of the otherwise perfectly healthy cells that were not involved in the initial trauma, rolling your ankle. And then, of course, if you activate those muscles, there'll be no disuse atrophy. So the loss doesn't need to occur. Therefore, it's not secondary, it's primary. So that article, again, is called Secondary Cellular Death is Actually Negligent Homicide. You read that, and when you get done reading that, you'll be like, this is crazy. This is so simple. I know. I didn't say I was smart. I said I'm an organized reporter.
Yeah. I think you're going to change a lot of people's mindset. And I'm happy to help spread the word, because I think that's this is something that people need to hear and they need to know.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience. And anytime you have a question, by the way, I try to answer all questions from people. So if your questions, if you have questions about what you've just heard, you can email me. And it might take me a few days. I just did one with Kelly Starr about a week and a half ago, and I had about 120 questions, but I answered every one of them. So if you have questions, I will be happy to address them. And remember that everything I've said, you already know.
Mm-hmm. Now they can find that email on your website, GaryReinold.com.
Yeah, well, all you do is go contacts there and just send an email to contacts, and I'll answer.
There you go. All right, everyone. So thank you so much for listening to today's show. If you have any questions for Gary, contact him through his website. Go check out those blogs. Check out his book. It is amazing. I highly recommend picking it up. Until next week, guys. Happy squatting.
That's it for today, class, on Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horschig. For more exclusive content, log on to squatuniversity.com.